9.3 Nigeria Info. We're broadcasting live from Etimi and Crescent Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria. It's the last hour of the show, 8 minutes past the hour this Wednesday morning. I am Sheriff Quadri. You can watch Morning Crossfire live right now on Facebook and on YouTube, Nigeria Info 99.3. I did tell you earlier at 5 a.m. that at 8 o'clock we'll be talking about the conversation that we had at part one yesterday, and that is about female leadership in politics in Nigeria. This is the part two, and I have my guest already joining me via the telephone this morning. But before we get into it, let me have you know that if you are an aspiring young female politician, I would love for you to join our conversation today and express yourself as to what you've been doing, the impediments that you've had to, you know, tackle. If you haven't tackled anything, tell us your fears about going into politics as a female. If you've been in politics for some time now, tell us exactly what your experience has been like. It's a series that we're doing. It's a long series that we're doing, and we're going to have a part three to next week, Tuesday. Please watch out for it, and we'll make sure that we sensitize ourselves on the need to have more females. We'll give room for more females. We allow females play on a level play. We're not saying do them a favor, give them that chance to play on that same play field that, you know, the men play. And don't skew the system against them. That's what all we're saying, all right? So today we have the second part of that conversation, female leadership in politics. Nigeria has been recording low participation of women in both elective and appointed positions. This is a growing concern to many well-meaning Nigerians. Director of the Center for Democracy and Development, CDDA, policy advocacy and research think tank based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, Hidayat Hassan, once in 2019 was quoted to have said, and I quote now, "Female politicians are often reminded of their cultural and religious obligations, which require they cede governance to men while they concentrate on the home front." That's what CDD director who said back in 2019. Has that changed? I will leave that to you to answer, and I will definitely get that response from my guest this morning. And she also went on to say, and I quote, "If it is this stereotypical gender role that gives basis for the marginalization of women in politics, as men are perceived to be experts in politics, I beg, who dash men certificate in politics? Who dash men that certification that they are experts in politics?" Because that seemed to be the general view of how we perceived men and how we perceive women, both playing in the political arena. Now, Nigerians, you are saying this narrative has to change. This is not me. We only respond to what you say. That's what formed what we discuss on Nigeria Info here. Now, some say this cannot continue, that women have been marginalized and underrepresented in government policies and programs for too long and are tired of this trend. But it seems the narrative is already changing, isn't it? Do you think it's changing? Well, let me bring in my guest here, because if I should go on, trust me, this show will not start until 8:30. But let me bring in Risola Abiola. Risola Abiola is an advocate for gender equality and youth inclusion in governance. She contested in 2019 for House of Representatives in Abeokuta North and Obafemi Owode and Odeta Federal Constituency under the Action Democratic Party, ADP. She joins me right now on the program. Risola, a very lovely morning to you. Thank you for joining us on the Crossfire today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Let's start this way, because this is how I started with Tari Taylor last week. I'm going to start with your experience as a female politician. What was it like in 2019 when you came out?
In 2019, I think I'd been involved in politics prior to then. I'd been in politics since 2013 or thereabouts.
Okay.
So 2019 for me was an opportunity to put everything I'd learned to the test and to be involved at a level that I previously really wasn't. I'm talking about grassroots political participation now. Prior to that, I've been very active at the national level with some youth mobilization, young women's mobilization. I wasn't very active at home. So 2019 was a great learning experience with regards to grassroots politics and you know, getting to see how politicking has actually gone at that level. I've been part of campaigns for many actually joined politics before I ran, but it's one thing to campaign for someone else and it's yet another to campaign for yourself.
That's right. So tell me about the cultural influence, traditional influence in your activities back then. Were they any impediments culturally or traditionally?
I think would I say that I'm lucky in the sense that I'm from a place where our people are relatively progressive, you know, compared with people from a lot of other places. If you look at Abeokuta, that's the home of, you know, female legends like Funmilayo Ransom Kuti. So like female leadership is not something that is strange to our people. We've had women in positions of authority. We had a woman speaker. We have women commissioners. We've had, we've had women head of service. We've had women deputy governors. Even at the moment, our deputy governor is female. So female leadership is not something that's strange to our people. And, you know, within the traditional structure,
We've
always had a very powerful Iyalode that plays a very key role. And that's, you know, going down history lane, Funmilayo Ransom Kuti was so powerful. You know, our women were so powerful that they were able to actually get a king to like abdicate and, you know, just run away from town. So I've always been very powerful. So for me, gender was not a challenge. Youth perhaps, but it wasn't so much about gender. And I think also because of the way I campaigned and the fact that you know, I just ran a campaign like everybody else, and I approached it like everyone would, I think, because of where I'm from. So gender wasn't really a consideration, although I'll be fair and say that there were other women, I think there was one in particular who ran for governor under, I can't remember which party now, but it was a very small political party, and she said that during consultations, a lot of people were like, why are you trying to be governor when you're a woman? So she reported that happened to her, but it's not something I experienced while I was campaigning.
That brings me to my next question, really. Is this just some phantom beliefs, or you feel that truly there is some form of marginalization against the women folk, especially when it comes to elective and appointive positions in our political space? Is it real? Or people are just making things up?
People are making things up. I have done a lot of work in the gender advocacy space, especially as it pertains to politics. And no, it's not been made up at all. Since the return to democracy in 1999, we haven't been able to attain 10% representation for women in our national parliament. Just 10%, yes. At the moment, I think the House of Reps stands at about 3.4%, and the Senate is about 6% or thereabouts. Very ridiculous numbers, very low numbers. I think we have 11 women representatives in the House of Representatives now, out of 260 members.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just gives you an idea, it gives you an insight into how underrepresented women are, and why, you know, it seems like such a challenge getting women's issues to be prioritized sometimes. I worked as an aide to former Speaker Yakubu Dogara in the previous assembly. And during the constitution amendment process, you know, there was this bill being considered to secure 35% affirmative action for women in appointed positions at the federal and state level. And because we didn't have enough women in the House, you know, there was a lot of lobbying that was done. Women's organizations are trying really hard. Women legislators are putting in a lot of work. But because we didn't have a lot of women, we were not able to secure the 2/3 support that we needed to get that bill to scale to. The Speaker was kind enough to call for a second vote. And the second time around, we got even lower votes than the first time. So, that, you know, that just gives you an idea of what it is exactly that we're up against. Say the Gender and Equal Opportunity Bill, for instance, how long it's been before Parliament, the kind of stories that keep coming up. Some states have been proactive in passing gender-sensitive legislature. We have states like Edo, southeastern states that have passed legislature legislation against maybe like harmful widowhood practices. Mm-hmm. We have AKT with their gender and equal opportunity bill doing very well with the sex offenders register. You know, we have a number of states. Lagos has this domestic violence unit. You know, right. We have a couple of states that have done the needful, but it will send a very clear message. If we're also able to get women's issues prioritized at a national level. And I'm really hoping that, you know, with this assembly, the Speaker is very progressive, you know, relatively progressive. Mm. Look at a lot of other men's generation and how they speak. So right. I would say that the Speaker is a man. He seems very pro-women. We've had engagement, and I'm hopeful that perhaps this assembly will do the needful. I'm also hopeful that the Senate will do the needful, you know, and there's a lot of work going on in there. The essays on gender, they're doing a lot. The women... doing a lot. But like there's and when we now look at the political party structure itself, there's an office of the women leader, and a lot of people believe once that has been sorted out, then you don't really need a lot of women in other positions. But before I would argue that we don't need a women leader's office because it's tokenism, but I have seen people use that office very purposefully to get results, you know, for women within political parties. So I think it's also about who occupies the position and what they're able to do with it. And equitable representation demands that minus the office of the women leader, minus the office of the youth leader, women, young people should be adequately represented within leadership structures and other positions also, not just tokenistic positions where they're not able to contribute much.
Don't you think that there is, because I want to take you up on a few things that you've mentioned earlier before you move on. Don't you think there's something fundamentally wrong with the practice, the political practice in Nigeria? First, you mentioned the law, and there is no doubt there is a movement now at the National Assembly to give about 111 seats to women. First, the question will be, why do we need a law for women to be able to get a seat, a position in the National Assembly? That's the first question. Mm-hmm. Why not just allow them? I mean, who is stopping them to start with from participating freely as their male counterpart? That's number one. Number two, another question that people are asking is, maybe the problem is with the political parties themselves, how we practice politics at the party level, because a party will have to give everybody equal chance. Maybe the parties are not giving the women that chance. And you spoke about tokenism earlier, about creating a way. Why do you need that position to start with? Are you saying that take this one, just keep quiet first? If you say clap for this man, go clap for him. And that is your position in this party, women leader, mobilize women as though women are inferior in our political system. That is second. The third is the culture, the tradition of saying that women are supposed to be at home, taking care of the family. All of these put together, what's your thought about them? Do they help women participate more in terms of the law being worked on right now? Will it help women participate more? Secondly, the party politics, has it helped women to participate more? Then thirdly, the culture, the practice, tradition at the community level, has it helped? Because, Risola, you know, you mentioned yourself before now, women have always been in the forefront of activism, political engagement. They've always been there. So how did it change? How did everything change? And now we need a law for women to take part actively, ably being represented in politics.
When we talk about women having always been at the forefront of political participation, even now at the grassroots level, women do the canvassing. Women are very active at the grassroots, but it hasn't really translated to representation. Let's take a journey down history lane. The right to vote came for Nigerian women at different times in the north and in the south. Mm-hmm. And before then, men could vote. And when they were going to give women the right to vote, they attached it to whether or not they paid tax, which was one of the reasons why women revolted in my hometown, for instance. Now, that shows that right from time, historically, we've not always been equal politically. If men got the right to vote at a different point and women did at different points, and for northern women, it was even, I think, after independence that they were able to vote. For southern women, it came before then, shortly before, I believe. Mm. So that just gives you an insight into the fact that politically, women have always been regarded as second-class citizens. And whatever it is we're doing now is as a result of that foundation. Do you understand? Yeah. Now, why do we need a law ceding 111 seats to women? Always argued when it comes to affirmative action, a lot of people say it is positive discrimination, or that at the end of the day, it doesn't favor men and stuff like that. But the thing is this, we've always had political parties. Parliament has been in existence, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
Yet, we've always had a challenge with getting women elected, getting women even to emerge as candidates and getting women elected. So if this problem has persisted through time, we need to be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
Now, it's not enough to look at countries like Zambia and say, oh, they have equal representation, yeah, or look at countries like the Scandinavian countries and say, oh, women are very well represented. Or look at Rwanda and say, women have the majority in their parliament. Mm. These countries were able to achieve this because they deliberately the correct underrepresentation.
Right.
So we can't just talk about equity and who has been able to attain it without being willing to take that will make sure that we also move closer to it.
Mm.
Now, with the time I've spent around politicians, I can assure you that when you say, oh, okay, we have 360 seats in the House of Reps, and we have 109 seats in the Senate, let's create 111 seats for women, there is a very high probability that the average male politician will feel less threatened about his power being taken away if you say, let's create seats for women, as opposed to let us enact policies that will enable more women emerge as candidates,
yeah,
for the 360 seats that an overwhelming majority of men currently occupy. The first thing that will come to their head, an alarm bell will go off. They're trying to get me out. So you get what I'm trying to say? So from a psychological perspective,
yeah,
the average politician is more likely to support affirmative action in terms of creating seats for marginalized groups, as opposed to thinking that he's going to be giving up his seats for women to be better represented in politics.
This is an infomercial.
We'll be right back. Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3 is how you can locate us on those two platforms. This morning, we're having the second part of our conversation, a very important conversation, I must add to it, because it's quite, it's germane. It's quite important to talk about female leadership in politics in Nigeria. It's in part two. Part three is coming up next week.
Mm-hmm.
But for today, Risola Abiola is joining us this morning on the conversation. Risola is a female politician. She contested in the 2019 House of Representatives elections for Abeokuta North, Obafemi Awode, Odeda Federal Constituency under the Action Democratic Party, ADP. She joins us via the telephone this morning. We've been having a conversation since 8 this morning. In case you want to be a part of it, feel free to join us this morning. It's always a pleasure to know that you are there. But before I come to Risola again this morning, let me just share a bit of information this morning. As of February 2021, women serve as elected heads of state or government in just 21 countries of the world. In just 21 countries. I just thought that you should know that. In Nigeria here, about 51% of women are involved in voting during elections. 51% of women involved in voting during elections. Despite this, women are still underrepresented in both elective and appointed positions. Why is that? I mean, they always take part in voting process. So why are they not coming out to be voted for? Nigeria has a very few women participating in politics. Since the return of democracy in May 1999, there have been five administrations. You can count them yourself. 1999 through 2015, with four males dominating the seat. Obasanjo in 1999, late Umaru Musa Yar'Adua in 2007, Goodluck Jonathan in 2010, Goodluck Jonathan in 2011 as well, Muhammadu Buhari at present now. The position of vice president also follows the same trend. No woman ever as a vice president of Nigeria. You can say that for governor's seat as well. No woman as the governor, elected, let me put it that way, elected governor in any of the 36 states that we have, including the FCT. What does this say about female participation, especially in leadership positions in politics in Nigeria? Risola, thank you for joining us again on the show this morning. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Mm. Now, let's continue with our conversation. You were on a train of thought before the interruption earlier.
Yes, I was talking about the justification for pushing for 111 seats for women representatives.
Right.
And affirmative action, the fact that affirmative action is often used to correct underrepresentation, because we need to move from just talking about the need to ensure that women are better represented to enacting policies that actually will ensure that we have more women involved in the process and the structure of governance. So for me, I understand the argument against talking about the cost of political participation. That's a very valid concern. But as far as ensuring inclusion goes, I think psychologically there's a lot, it's like that we'll have a lot less opposition to the idea of seats for women, as opposed to politicians thinking women want to take the existing seats away from them. And then let's also look at the party structure, which was something you mentioned earlier. Is the problem from the party level? I believe that actually, if we're able to also get affirmative action at the party level, it's going to help a great deal with ensuring that not just women now, but we're talking about marginalized groups generally, women, young people, people with disabilities, are better able to emerge as candidates through the whole primary process. The challenge with that is, as it is, as things stand at this moment, women have a lot less resources than their male counterparts when it comes to finances. And we all know how expensive politics is.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work that needs to actually be done. It's one thing to say, let's have an even playing field. It's another to equip women as others in marginalized groups with the kind of resources that they need to actually be able to compete and to actually level that playing field. The cost of elections, I've been through elections, I know how terribly expensive it is, and I have a pretty good idea of how challenging it's going to be for those who wish to try again. And I can tell you, really, if we really, really want to help women, help young people, help qualified Nigerians get into positions of power, then we need to learn to put our money where our mouth is. It's not enough to just need more women in office. We should be able to support those who are doing the work, women candidates or women aspirants whom we trust will be able to deliver, who we believe are worthy of our support. We should be able to pull resources for them. We need to cultivate a culture of crowdfunding. If we actually go beyond mainstream politics and beyond the status quo, we need to learn how to support candidates that we actually like, that we believe in, with funds, because at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to. Campaigning is expensive all over the world, and in advanced democracies, crowdfunding is actually the norm. You see candidates giving breakdowns of expenditure and all of that after campaigns, even during their phone lines, their places to donate. Like, it's not expected that as a candidate in advanced democracies, you will be the one to fund your campaign. But in Nigeria, a lot of the funding has to come from your pocket or the kind of structure you're running on, perhaps your leaders within that structure, which brings us to yet another issue. We cannot be complaining about godfatherism in a system where we rely on these people to actually fund campaigns for people who win. Do you get what I'm trying to say? So, if we're looking at how the system has been stacked or rigged against women, against young people, these are all fundamental issues that are tied to it, that have given us the kind of system that we have now. So if we're going to address underrepresentation, address marginalization, we need to take this thing apart and look at all the moving parts that actually contribute to it. There's the issue of funding, there's the issue of party structure, there's the issue of meeting and enabling legislation.
Right.
Because even if we do have the laws and we don't have women coming forward, that's going to be another issue. Because we've had political parties with progressive constitutions that will say, oh, okay, we're feeding this to women, we're feeding this to young people.
Right.
If you don't have women coming forward for those positions, then there's really no point. It's still going to be men and people over the youth age limit still occupying those positions.
That's exactly what I was about to ask you. Like, even if we create these seats for women, you heard the stats I read out earlier. More women, 51%, always come out to vote. But then the representation, the actual representation is not there. So if we create these seats for women, what is the assurance? I mean, have we removed other impediments, other obstacles in the ways of the women to come out freely? Where then do we go from there? How do we ensure that they come out to vie for positions?
If we're able to get this affirmative action bill to scale through, then I think it's going to also be something binding on political parties. So perhaps for every number of seats they put forward, the women's seat representative has to go to somebody who is female. So I think that, I think, will be worked out at the party level.
Okay.
But at the same time, we need to do more regarding societal conditioning, behavioral change, communication, to get people to support women. And, you know, there are places where you find competent women seeking elected posts.
Mm-hmm.
And people would rather vote for an antelope. They would rather vote for a fish. Before voting for that woman, no matter how qualified she is. And there are stories from other women candidates and aspirants in 2019. Some were threatened with sexual violence. Some were not even able to run at all because they were harassed by their leaders and their parties. There were issues with candidates emerging, primaries in hold. Like, it's just a lot of nonsense, really, that a lot of women candidates went through. And the funny thing is, in 2019, I think because of the proliferation of political parties, we have a lot more women emerge as candidates, even though very few won. At the moment, I think we have just about 40 women in state houses of assembly, in the 36 state houses.
Right.
There are many state houses with no woman at all. And I think in a lot of cabinets, if you remove the Commissioner for Women Affairs, you will find no other woman in the cabinet. And I think in one state in particular, the Commissioner for Women Affairs is a man.
My word.
We've had no women leaders in political parties too. So, you know, that's what I was saying exactly. Like, if you look at this issue, for instance, now, political parties have this thing where for every 3 delegates, one has to be female. There are parts of the country where even to get that one female is difficult, so they end up sending 3 men. So unless the party insists at the national level and says, look, I said one of you has to be a woman, there will be no woman delegates at all from some places.
Right.
So it kind of just gives you an insight into. So like when we're talking about the fact that when women come out, it's because of the cultural and the societal conditioning that's gone into a lot of women and a lot of people from these parts. So like the interest might be there, but they're not willing to participate because of the stigma that is attached to it. When women politicians are this, they're that, they're always divorced or unmarried.
You are literally taking this out of my mouth, because I was about to ask you about the perception, because perception is almost everything. Perception about women who are politicians. I've heard a lot of things. They are loose women. They don't have homes. They are that. How do we begin to combat that? You know, these things are very, if not that we're talking about this, people have this mindset already in their head.
Yeah.
If they see a female politician, they already have the bio that they don't know. Okay. They have the bio, right?
People usually have a lot to say. The thing is this, it's the same way, same thing I say when I'm talking to young women and they ask me about sexual harassment, and they hear a lot of sexual harassment goes on in politics and all that. In the Nigerian society, there are a number of things everywhere actually that happen, and it cuts across sectors. Women stand a certain risk. Say women in any sector. We have a documentary recently talking about sex for grades, right?
Yeah.
And then we've had women come out to talk about harassment in virtually every sector, banking, marketing, healthcare, like you name it. There is no... Politics is a field, it's a career field like every other one. So there is nothing happening in any field that is not happening in politics. There is nothing in politics that could not possibly happen to you elsewhere. You could go somewhere for a job interview and someone will proposition you. Do you understand?
Yeah.
If it happens in politics, it's not because politics is particularly bad. It's because they have a cultural problem with trivializing things like that in this country, which I hope someday will change and will be different. So it's the same thing when people talk about women in politics being divorcees or women in politics having character flaws. It's a lot of nonsense to me, because you will find that divorce rates are high everywhere, and not every woman who has caused to leave her husband is politically involved or politically exposed. It's not... conditioning actually is something that does my head in. It's just something that we really need to sit down and come to realize that certain things. People have challenges with their relationships, irrespective of what field they're involved in. So, and there are actually quite a number of women who are in politics and have, you know, they're doing okay with the home front.
Right.
And even if they're not, it's not, nobody asks a man, for instance. It's women that get questions like, so how do you balance your position with being in the home? It's women who always have to be keeping their husbands sweet when they're in positions of authority. Nobody will tell an MC, recognize my wife 100 times before I leave here because I'm in office and she's not. I don't want her to feel. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of pressure that is on women in public service. It's a lot of pressure that is on women in the public space. It's a lot of pressure that's on women who are successful professionally, even outside of politics. And if divorce rates are high, I actually don't have the data to support that.
Yeah.
But if divorce happens not with women in politics, like they've said, we also need to look at societal conditioning with our men and why it might seem that the average man sometimes, even take it outside of politics, his wife is more successful than he is.
Mm.
Oh, she's a nurse, he's struggling with some job and he's not doing so well. He begins to take it out on that woman.
Mm.
There's a lot of that happens in this country, that happens in this society. So like it's... a lot of it also has to do not with politics, but with like the general conditioning that a lot of our men, a lot of our people have been subjected to. If it seems like your wife is successful,
yeah,
or she's attaining some level of success that you're not comfortable with, people begin to make it seem like, oh, she wears the pants and you don't, or you're Mrs. or Mr., and then they start calling you by your wife's name.
Right.
That's a lot of societal conditions that actually affect relationships, and it has nothing to do with politics itself.
Mm.
It's about personality traits. That's what it boils down to. So it's not politics that's responsible for it. If these are part of the issues that we need to address. These are part of the gender issues that need to be addressed, and we need to sit down and have honest conversations about,
right,
why is it that we expect that, irrespective of what field a man chooses, whatever he chooses to do,
mm,
it is a given that his partner should support him. But when it comes to women, this should come first, that should come first, this consideration should matter more.
Mm.
Why do we not expect women to get the same level of support from their spouses that we expect women to give their men when they are ascending in life?
That's right. It's a valid question, Risola. Let's go to the telephone now and talk to people some more about what they think about our conversation this month. Would they vote for a female presidential candidate, for instance? Would they vote for a female governorship candidate, for instance? These are the areas that we're still lagging behind when it comes to inclusivity of the female gender in the leadership of our political culture here in Nigeria. I want to hear what Lagos has got to say as regards this. The number to call if you're joining us this morning, Risola is here with me on the telephone. The number is 01465-7190. That is 01465-7190. We're going to make this very brief and straight to the point. I think I'm almost out of time. So let's see how many calls we can squeeze in. Hello, good morning to you.
Good
morning to you. Welcome.
Yes. You know, listen, last time they do election, LBF will come out. Before you know it, she will go. Why? Is there any time any woman that has come out from this country, she wants to contest and they desire her ticket? Is there any time like that? Okay, if they think that PDP and APC and nobody can allow a woman to come out and contest now, why not they form their own particular party? And because they contest, they have like 51% of the vote.
Okay.
And they say this is all the whole women in Nigeria. You know, they have their own party and they will be coming out, even calling, using their wisdom and call their husband. If you are a woman, you are in this party, then you come and support me. Call your family and friends. Come and support me. They will win a lot of fear. Every time they will be saying that people are denying them and nobody supporting them. Why? It's because I just want to make people talk. I have a lot of points I want to say.
I'm glad you shared your point. Risola, the call I was just basically talking about women supporting women, which is also one of the things that have raised here. Like I said, there are talks out there, and we're having this conversation because of the talks that are going around. And one of such is that women don't support women. Even when women come out from our political parties, they don't gain as much support as from the male counterparts, for instance.
Okay, so politics is a competitive field, and I've heard people say this too. But the curious thing is that if we take issues like electoral violence, for instance, political violence, when men are standing assassins after each other, shooting up each other's rallies, nobody comes out to say men don't support men. It's always when it comes to women that people expect us to always hold hands and be all kumbaya and never have disagreements.
Mm.
That's not how it works among human beings generally. People politics is a competitive field. We're not all going to agree on the same thing. That's one. Two, when it comes to general elections, we have male candidates who don't get votes, who don't get as many votes as other as other male candidates who might actually go on to win or come second or third. When it comes to women supporters of political parties, it's the same thing. People have political parties that they support. So irrespective of who that party feels, that's who they will vote for. That's why people join mainstream political parties, APC, PDP. They already have support structures. There are people who have been loyal to APC since the days when it was AD. People who have been loyal to APC since the days when it was ANPP, you know, before the merger, before they came together.
Yeah.
People who always vote a certain way, irrespective of who is on the ticket.
Right, right.
So many of the supporters are also women. I mentioned something earlier about women being the ones doing most of the work at the grassroots, canvassing for votes and getting supporters out to vote and all of that. Women are the ones who do most of the work, yes, and that's because you find that political parties have people who are loyal to them. With new parties, I was a founding member of the APC.
Okay.
I returned to the party after the elections. I ran on the platform of a small party. So I've had experience with a small party. I've had experience with a large party. And I found that there, unless maybe there are issues with internal party democracy that causes the loyalty crisis.
You know what? Let's go to break. We'll be right back. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are back on the program and I have less than 2 minutes to go. My goodness me, this conversation this morning. And we've been able to take just one call and one call only. I don't know. I really don't know. I can't assure that we'll be able to get Risola back on the show sometime in the future. But we have next week Tuesday to speak with Cynthia Mbamalu of Yaga Africa. Cynthia should join us next Tuesday and we'll have that conversation. Risola, man, I don't know really. I don't know if we'll be able to. Risola,
yeah.
Good morning to you once again. But hey, the thing is, we have to go now. And I have a lot of people calling. They want to engage. What do we do now?
I don't know. Really.
You know what? We'll talk some more after the show, yeah? So we can see if we can have another edition to engage again.
Okay, all right.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Risola. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. There you go, Lagos. Risola Abiola, who joined us all the way from Ogun State this morning to have us here have thoughts, our takes on women's political future in Nigeria. I'm Sheriff Quadri. Sheriff Quadri across all social media platforms. It's been nice doing this with you. I'll be on your radio again tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. But this is where we will drop the anchor here on the Morning Crossfire. It's 9 o'clock already. Let's bring you the news, the headlines. After the headlines, Jimidisu will be here with Daily Digest, the Ebumi edition with Jimidisu. Thank you all for being a part of the show. Good morning to you.
The headline news on 99.3 Nigeria. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.